The ADVFN Podcast with Justin Waite.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 358. On the podcast today, African Potash Executive Chairman Chris Cleverly answers your questions. Plus, Doc Holliday, small cap aficionado, talks about African Potash, Independent Resources, Strat Aero, BAE Systems, ADSS or Atlas Development and Sports Services, New World Oil and Gas, and Paternoster Resources. Yes, it's a long podcast, but full of information. Plus, I have today's penny stock with potential, as suggested by you. Well, not you. You. That's right. By all means, if you have a penny stock that has potential or you think has potential, click the link here at sharepickers.com and fill out the form. It takes about 5 minutes, and I could be reading it out in a podcast in the not-too-distant future. Plus, this podcast is dedicated to BenL66, who gave me a 5-star review and cracking rating on iTunes. And by all means, please do the same if you can. If you get value from the podcast, click the link here at sharepickers.com. Give me a 5-star rating review, and I will dedicate a podcast to you. Joining me on the podcast right now is someone who's been described, actually, in a question from a private investor as the hottest man on AIM. It's Chris Cleverly, chairman of African Potash. Thanks for coming back on, Chris.
Very good. Thanks so much, Justin, for inviting me on.
That's all right. Do you feel like you're the hottest manager on AIM?
You know what? With these things, sometimes you're up, sometimes you're down. So I don't really know how to wear that one. But I think in terms of the company that I'm looking after, I think I've got certainly one of the hottest properties. We're dealing in fertilizer as a trader and as a fundamental producer through our mining site that we have in Lakdinka, which is in the Republic of Congo. We're selling potash. We're in the trendiest sector, people tell me, which is Africa, which is growing, and in agriculture. So in terms of the usual resource businesses, I think we're in a very exciting spot. You join us right now as we're about to ignite as a vertical fertilizer producer and seller and distributor. We have, as you know, Justin, a very, very big contract with COMESA, which is in 20 countries in Africa, from Egypt to Zambia, on the southern and eastern side, that have joined together in a free trade union to do business together. We're going to be their fertilizer supplier and trade for them on the basis we do good quality at great prices. So we're at an incredible moment in time, and we've just bought a fertilizer trader from a big black economic empowerment group in South Africa, which is also partners with one of the biggest transport logistics groups in the world. So in everything that we're doing, I think we put our feet very carefully, because in Africa you must tread carefully. You must consider what you do before you do it. But we have done that, and we brought on some very good people on support to help us do that. The great Africa hands, Peter Hain, Lord Hain, former British Foreign Minister, and the Right Honourable Mark Simmons, who is an African Minister for the Tory Party. And look, Justin, you know, there's lots to feel good about.
Yeah, well, I mean, the share price has performed. I was in the stock when it was at 0.5, but it went down to sort of around about 0.3, and it shot up almost 10 bagged within a couple of weeks, almost. Yeah, back to one and a half or one point six at the moment. And you started off with this asset in Lakdinka with the potash, and then you released a surprising update saying you're now going to be trading in COMESA, the common market of Africa there, and you've done several memorandums of understanding with several companies or suppliers or producers there. And so how is that? Have you got any more MOUs coming out, or I remember there was a target of 500,000, wasn't it?
That's right. So we gave ourselves 12 months from when we started signing up these MOUs to deliver 500,000 as a minimum. That target given to us actually by COMESA. We know that we can achieve that and exceed it. So now we've now proven that the market is there. We've now thought about making sure that we've got the supply, the logistics, and the financing. That's taken a bit of time to put together, because we've had to do it in a compelling way that wasn't too expensive. And we realized that trying to do it in a piecemeal fashion was not necessarily the right way for us to seed. So what we've done is we've bought with paper at a 45% premium to our present price the business of a fertilizer trader in Southern Africa that was already very successful. So, you know, an incredible deal. And the market is taking a little bit of time to appreciate and understand that. But that's okay. You know, when the deals start coming in, they'll realize what's actually happened. And they realize that, we've pulled off something pretty incredible here.
Yeah, okay. So let's go through some questions I've had submitted from private investors. First one, what's causing... there are a few... But let me just point out, there are a few questions. There are not questions, just saying, well done, Chris. So I'll go past those, but I'll get some questions here. So what's causing the delays for the finance agreement and the first confirmed delivery?
Okay, so what caused the delay is actually... It's quite tricky to actually mash up the buyer to the collateral manager, and then the collateral manager to the CIF port, and then from CIF port to the supplier. By doing the deal that we've done now with Beryl Holdings, we've now managed to match that up. So the financing credit issues that we had before are not there. We're going to continue to create a large-scale credit facility in any event with our partner, the advisor Leuter Capital, and we're going to obviously be exploring our relationships with the African Development Bank going forward. But in the short term, what is good is that we're now working with somebody who, this is what they do for a living. They finance, they provide transport, they deliver, and they complete with their customer in fertilizer throughout Africa. So, you know, we're at the stores now, and we're looking at the finishing line, and we know exactly what we need to do.
Okay, next question. There's been some recent high-profile appointments. What roles will these individuals play in the strategic future of the company?
Well, you know what? The thing about fertilizer in Africa, if you try to talk to the president of America or the prime minister of England about fertilizer, it's unlikely that you'd get past the number 10 door or the White House front door. But in Africa, fertilizer is essentially, in the biggest drought in African history about to begin, life and death. So as soon as you actually start to deal with fertilizer, you get very high in the levels of government that you're talking to. And the governments in Africa often provide subsidies for fertilizer, often centralized fertilizer purchases. And so this is a government-to-government conversation. So the high-profile, the guys that you mentioned, you know, Pete Hayne, Lord Hayne, as he now is this week, and the Right Honourable Mark Simmons, they are incredibly high-level door openers and communicators with government at the highest levels. Guys that they've been dealing with for ages and ages. That's number one. Number two, when you've got guys at that level, it means that you've managed to avoid a lot of the dirt that you can get into in trading in Africa, because people know that they've got to keep the highest levels of privacy. So it keeps us at the right level in all respects.
Okay, and so they're high-end door openers and sort of, you know, people like that. So someone also asked the question, can you afford these people?
Yes, because, you know, just like I bought a lot of fertilizer trading company this week with paper, because our paper's good. It's incredibly liquid paper. It's probably one of the most liquid stocks on AIM, certainly in the top 10 or so. It's very popular paper for people who believe that they're going to add value to our business. So our high-end supporters are very much remunerated in our success, just like our investors are.
Yeah, okay, excellent. So our next question, what is the status of delivery against the initial MOU for 50,000 MT of fertilizer to the Zimbabwe Fertilizer Supply Company?
Well, both in Zimbabwe and in DRC right now, it's very difficult to actually talk without giving information away here that I'm not supposed to give away. But we've made great progress and been assisted with that by Beryl. And we're very, very hopeful that pre-Christmas, there'll be some coins in that Christmas pudding for those who supported us in regard to that particular question. But I can't give you any more than that.
Nice. All right. Next question. Is African Potash involved in any way with, and I apologise for the pronunciation, Nyombo Investments for the supply of fertiliser to Zambia?
I've got to say, I don't think so. Okay. I'd have to look how that's spelt, and I'd have to check with the team on the ground, but I don't think so.
Okay. Is AFPO concentrating on delivering the first three MOUs, or are there potentially other MOUs due in other countries in the COMESA region?
You know, what I decided to do early on was to show to the supplier market in particular, and the finance market, that there was a large-scale amount of contracts that could be aggregated by one company such as ours, so that we could get best price when we were dealing with those people. So there is actually a lot more MOUs that we can get, and there is and those MOUs can all be converted into agreements as soon as possible.
But
at this present stage, we kind of said, look, that's where we're going to stop while we go fix the machine, get the engineering right, and then we're ready to move forward efficiently and effectively.
Okay. Okay. Question concerning your Lakdinga asset. What's the timeline and what are you doing with that at the moment, if anything, at the moment?
Well, people will notice if they're looking at the particular sector, which is the potash sector, that there's a lot of heat around it, and some of them would have picked up there's a lot of heat around the Republic of Congo at the moment. There's a lot of very interesting things are going to happen around Elemental. I'm sure people are aware of that, who are looking at that. And we're next door to Elemental. The market will also be aware, they've been listening to my statements, that the Republic of Congo is the only small country in the world with world-class assets in all the three elements needed to make up fertilizer, which is nitrogen, phosphate, and potash. So there's going to be a lot happening around Lakdinga. We hope to be very much at the forefront of that. We've engaged with the Republic of Congo government to enable ourselves to be at the forefront of that. So we're obviously, you know, very, very, very excited about being involved in it. But there's not a lot I can tell you today.
Okay. Next question. In one of your interviews after the COMESA deal, you mentioned the profit margin would be around 15%. We later came to know via RNS there's going to be around 6%. Could you shed some light on this, please?
Yeah, I said that in one of the other interviews, it would be from 5 to 15%, so 6% within that realm. We're keeping it conservative until we finally got the numbers in together. And, we'll be within the margin that we said we're going to be in.
Okay. The release today with the RNS about the bridging loan, someone said there, someone's called it the most expensive loan in AIM history. Now, what's your take on this? And also, why didn't you do a small placing instead?
Well, there's a couple of things. One is that I said that I would not dilute the investors at the start to follow my trading platform ambitions. You know, when we began at the start, people were worried, oh my God, that looks like a really expensive thing to do. It's going to require a placement. And so what I said was I wouldn't do it. And by taking on this loan, we haven't done it. In fact, in terms of it being the most expensive loan in history, we actually did the loan offers we had outside of this were more expensive because, of course, it's an unsecured loan. What's actually quite interesting about this loan is it's actually from the senior management within our company, and they should know what they're doing. And if they're supporting us to do this, then we're out sort of filling in all the dots there on the logic. There must be something good about us. Because they wouldn't lend that amount of money at any rate of interest unless they thought they were going to get it back.
Yeah, okay, cool. Marvellous, Chris. What is it, you know?
Yeah, that's good. Thank you, Justin.
Yeah, well, listen, fella, before you go, for anyone who's in any doubt, give us three reasons to why someone should become an investor in African Potash.
Well, look, there's three reasons why anyone should want to invest anyway. Mm-hmm. One is the potential return. And here the potential return is vast because we're moving from being, you know, you've seen it go from 0.3 all the way to going to 3.5, but none of these are really reflect the size, the amount of money that we've made in terms of revenue, not just from developing the big site, but particularly from this trading platform that we've now built, which is unique and the only one that can service COMESA for the benefit of COMESA. That's a really big reason. I think there's some of you out there are impact investors. They want to see that their money not only has a great economic return, but that it has a social return. By investing in fertilizer, you invest in the future of African agriculture and its ability to feed itself, and the potential it has as the last great area of the world with 60% of the world's uncultivated arable land has the potential to feed the rest of us when we start to overpopulate. So that's two pretty good reasons for investing. And I think the third one is that we're an incredibly liquid stock. So, you know, you've invested in us. Chances are, if you hang around long enough, you'll see the price is the one that you paid already and probably get a profit. And if you stick around patiently, I'm pretty sure that you're going to end up with a very good return for those who put money in that means something to them.
Yeah.
I think quite a lot of our investors do that.
Okay. Just one more question for you, Chris. And where do you see, where's your ambition here in the company? Where do you want to be, in 5 years' time? Where would you like this company to be, realistically?
Well, you know, I'm building the company. You know, we're not building it as a small company. You know, you just look at the hirings that we've taken on board and look at the kind of trades that we're trying to put together. What we're trying to do is really place ourselves in the centre of a very big move, I think, across Africa, which is the agriculture industry in Africa, and to place ourselves at the area where there's the least amount of risk, which is that we supply the input to allow people to grow things. Growing things can be pretty hard, but actually supplying fertiliser to the people who grow things is probably the least risky element of it. The one thing that's going to happen in Africa more and more is that it's going to need more and more and more fertiliser, and it's going to be getting it from us. So where do I see ourselves? I see ourselves at the centre of something that's bigger than us, and hopefully we can ride that wave.
Marvellous. Well, Chris, thanks for speaking to me on that windswept park you're in there, and hopefully you'll blow some other people away with some more releases. When you do, come back on the podcast and have a future chat.
I'd love to, Justin. I'd love to. Thanks again, mate, for having me over.
Okay, today's penny stock with potential is suggested by Andy. What's the company? It's Ural Energy. UEN is ticker. It's an oil producer currently in two separate locations, also has its own refinery. Would you say it's a long, short, medium-term investment? Outstanding. So didn't answer the question, but outstanding. Thanks, Andy. Currently producing 2,100 barrels of oil per day, drilling additional wells and have bought additional acreage. How many shares does the company have in issue? 249 million. What's the current price and market cap? 2.5 market cap. 2.5 pence, 6.23 market cap. What's the revenue and profit loss does the company generate? Gross profit of $2 million for the first half of 2015. Operational loss of $100,000 there. How much cash does the company have? Currently zero, but no debt after a $5 million acquisition. There's three reasons why you think this company has potential. Number one, unloved and under radar. Russian oil producer. Had legacy issues. Now all resolved. Number two, increasing production and acreage. And number three, easy access to cash. So that's Ural Energy. And it's UEN. By all means, please, do your own research. Don't buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation on the podcast, as it's only just opinion. Please check out those stats if you're interested. It's Ural Energy, suggested by Andy. Thank you very much. Ticker UEN. And by all means, if you have a penny stock you think has potential, click the link here at sharepickers.com and suggest away. Joining me on the podcast is small cap aficionado Doc Holliday. You're right, Doc.
Hey, mate. How are you doing? You okay?
Yeah, I'm all right. And so, what have you been up to? I know you've been reading the new David Lenegas blog. Have you been reading that?
Do you know, funnily enough, this evening somebody sent me a link to it. I'm lagging a bit on current affairs within social media at the minute as well, you know, but we shan't discuss it further.
It's nice that he's become a blog writer because he's a busy man, isn't he?
Yeah, you know, it's fair play to me. He's a busy guy. Hey, look, he does. He gets a lot of things done. And, love him or hate him, he's a bit of a Marmite character. And a lot of people kind of really like him. And there's a few kind of detractors and haters out there. But there's one thing for sure. He's made himself a pretty penny. And people who've followed the man over the years have made some good money on the back of him. And I won't deny it. I myself have had a great deal of success with a number of companies, and there's the odd one. We shan't name names either, but that hasn't gone to plan.
So anyway, let's get on to stocks. So have you been looking at anything, Doc? What are you keeping up with? Because when you're on Twitter, I can keep easy tabs on what you're looking at, but at the moment it seems to be all in your mind and on your little podcast there. So what are you looking at the moment?
It's a little bit like when they used to draw the FA Cup, isn't it, and they put the hands in the velvet bag and pull the balls out, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
Well, I'm doing that on a daily basis, literally, quite literally. But anyway, when we get to the stock market, there's lots going on. I mean, obviously, you've been chatting to Mr. Cleverly from African Potash.
Yeah.
We've heard now that they've got some funding lined up, and I actually think when you start to take loans to bridge, you're doing one of two things. It's one, you can't get any decent cash anywhere, so you're buying time, or two, you know damn well that you've got so many different things coming down the pipe that you can command a premium or a better price in the not too far into the future. Looking at the price action, where it's been, where it's come from, African Potash 2015 has been a big story. Mr. Cleverly's certainly a well-refined guy, pretty new to getting in front of the cameras with a name-listed junior mining company. But, gosh, hasn't he done well? So I think we're going to probably see that run on to 2016. I think if he doesn't announce a string of interesting deals over the next 6 to 12, 15 weeks, I'll eat my hat. But I could be wrong. I'm going to be speaking to him myself. It would appear now that I've slid down the pecking order, so I normally get your kind of cast-offs 3 or 4 days later. So we'll see how we get on. But no, he's a great guy. He's been doing a lot of good things there. One or two things haven't been to my liking. There's certain things that I'm just not keen on. One of them is ex-politicians or lords of, lords or these, anyone who dresses up, wears any kind of regalia that looks a little bit stupid and can get pissed and fall asleep on the job and be paid for it. That to me just doesn't kind of ring true of a hard working ethic. But unfortunately, these lucky sods who sit in the House of Lords or the House of Commons, they can sit and nap on the job, and they can have a bevy as well, and they're getting paid. It's great, isn't it? But hey, there you go. I don't agree with that kind of thing. Most of these companies that bring them in, it's a bit of a kind of signature as to what to give them credibility and to perhaps shine a bit of glitz and glamour on the business. It's an old fashioned thing. It's outdated. It's a bit like these PR companies. Most of them are load of rubbish, and companies are pissing money down the drain on a week or month by month basis to hire them. There are good people out there, and there are people out there that can do a really, really good job for companies, but unfortunately on a whole I've come across a lot of spivs over the years, so I just kind of put them in that category. It's probably because I'm a working class lad.
Yeah, well, do you know what he did say? I mean, there was a question about that, and he did say, I said, someone questioned it, that not only why hire them, but surely they're costly. And he defended them by saying, listen, when you want to get in at government level and you want to talk about potash to someone government level, it's hard work, He said they don't want to know unless you have connections. And these guys do open doors. And so for him, it's strictly a business. And I remember you saying that actually recently on a podcast, you all saying that. And I agreed with you. And I thought, yeah, why do they need these high-fluting guys who charge, a lot of money to do, not a lot. But, he did say they can open doors where I couldn't get to. So,
I don't doubt it. It's just nepotism in the market to build around that kind of thing. The whole kind of structure of the market is a very capitalist thing, isn't it? And it is designed to kind of vacuum the money from the many to the few. Everybody has these ideas and romantic ideas of grandeur and honesty and integrity and decency in the market. The reality is it's a very different place. And the one thing we do know is within, upper and more, significant central government figures, that that they all kind of, to quote an old friend of mine, they all kind of piss in the same pot, don't they? And unfortunately, if you do want to get things done, they're a necessary evil. I suppose if you're actually in that position, what a charmed life you must have. But it's not from where I'm from. I'm a roll your sleeves up kind of guy, and I just find it all a little bit kind of strange how you can be spending 4 hours at lunch every day at meetings, getting tanked up and actually earning a bloody good living from it. For me, it doesn't smack of hard work at all. It smacks of nepotism. But hey, if that's what it takes to get things done, that's what it takes.
Yeah, and do you know, like I said, it's come off a little bit, as in the price, but you can't help it because it's been more than a 10 bagger it was. And but I do quite like him. He's got something about him, I think, that he will get things done, you know, and that's the feeling I have about him. And so, well, you know, we have to wait and see.
He's like the avant-garde kind of CEO in the market of 2015. You know, you will not get many people that are as charismatic and intriguing and engaging as Chris Cleverly, no doubt about it. Yeah. And I think that's the thing that people really like.
Yeah. He's very personable. He made me like him. I mean, even when I, you know, put that question to him about that bridging loan and saying it was very expensive and the most expensive loan on AIM, he laughed and, you know, and he said never to be, and he saw the funny side. And whereas, you know, some CEOs might get a bit stuffy about it, seen it as a personal attack, he just laughed and said, "Well, listen, we did look for money around the place, and there were other more expensive options than that. Don't worry." And he said, "Because it's within sort of management, you know, they believe the business is going to work, and that's why they've done it." So he's got a good answer for everything, and it's almost like, you know, it is thought through. What he's doing is thought through. Anyway, that's AFPO. Anything else you've been looking at, Doc?
Always, you know, we chatted, I think last time I was on, about independent resources. They went on. Greg's been out there beating the drum. I believe he's back doing another interview at the end of the week. The shares have started to react a bit too soon for me, you know, believe it or not. I thought that the volume that was going through daily, it was probably going to take a few weeks to kind of churn through some of the, you know, less firmer or less sticky members or subscribers or participants in the market to that raise or to that company. I kind of factored by the end of this week, start of next week, we'll start to see a move. It happened at the start of the week. We've seen a little bit of action, a bit of selling go into it, but it's come up from spot 55, 60. Mm-hmm. I think it was trading at 75, 80, in the last couple of days. I honestly think that's going to go on and do well. It's not for me to kind of beat the drum on that story now. I've talked about it. Greg's put his story out there. It's now up to the company to start to deliver. But, you know, when you look at a company that's got a revenue stream of the $100,000 a month, they've got some production, they've got uplift costs which are economical at $20-$25, and they've got, you know, huge asset size in the Casa Haddada assets. I mean, all right, I agree. They're probably not queuing up to enter Tunisia today, but things turn on a twopence in this business. And, you know, the one thing we know about the troubles out in North Africa, the Middle East, particularly with the news today that they were voting to increase kind of operations out in Syria against ISIL or ISIS or, you know, Al-Qaeda's new faction, or if you're a conspiracy theorist, you know, a made-up kind of group that doesn't exist. Whatever your standpoint on it is, the one thing we know is, you know, you can imagine they're going to be, you know, long-term forecast increases on the sale and manufacturing of Rolls-Royce engines and different turbines that are used on jet engines, and, you know, BAE Systems will probably start to see them do particularly well, and we'll probably see a rise in the price of oil. Wherever there's a war, whenever there's trouble, or wherever there's fear that you might not get hold of something, it goes up. If you wanted to buy a Furby 4 or 5 years ago, you were paying twice what they were going for in the summertime. And as silly as that might sound, it's a supply and demand thing. It happens with any commodity. So if there's anything positive to be taken out of today's or yesterday's news, or certainly the topic of conversation, it is that these troubles will, I believe, start to increase price of oil, because I think the demand will start to be questioned. And I think we'll probably start to see physical gold react as well. It is one of those things that we used to see a lot of. It happened like clockwork, you know. We had these pair trades that worked in opposite directions. You know, you had sort of the dollar pound, the dollar yen, the dollar, you know, the pound euro, and all these different pairs. And they kind of reacted in a in a synchronized manner. In the last year or two, everything's kind of been flipped and thrown on its head. But, you know, when bombs start getting dropped out of the sky, it generally starts to cause fear within certain markets, and it rewards other ones. And I think that, like I say, the likes of Rolls-Royce and the likes of BAE Systems and anything really that's related to war, you know, certain radar system control companies, even like little companies like Stratera, who've signed deals with, I think it's like the US government, NASA, different things like that. Little companies like that, they'll do well because people will be able to anticipate that all of these troubles in the world, they need, you know, drones, they need these, you know, observation kind of tools. And you know, we see the share price react. And, you know, you look at Stratera today, it's at 8.5p. It was at 10p not too long ago. Come all the way back down to 5, back to 8.5. You know, it's people can kind of envisage what will come because it's all cyclical. You know, 4 or 5 years ago, it was problems out in Libya. You know, 10 years ago, it's problems in Iraq. You know, 15 years ago, it's problems somewhere else. And it's the same dance. It doesn't always happen exactly the same way, but there's certain things that just react that way because naturally currencies are affected when there's a lot of war and a lot of pressure. You know, currencies are affected. The price of gold generally goes up, so you kind of transship paper to a physical kind of precious metal, and that's how it's worked like that historically for many years.
Are you in Aero Strat Aero?
Yeah, do you know what, it's actually one that I was in. I bought some stock, I sold a little bit. I think at the time they were raising a bit of cash, there were a few warrants attached to it. I wasn't sure whether the market would like what it was doing. I'd heard a lot at that point that they were trying to, I don't know if you spoke to them, but they were trying everything to get the name out there, and there just didn't seem to be a great deal of interest from what I could gather. The share price completely proved me wrong, by the way, but I was really interested in getting a little bit of exposure to it, so I took a little bit of stock in that company. I didn't hold on to it for too long, but I did it because I wanted to. They were offering an option at the time if you bought some stock. So I got a call off a broker. They were doing a deal on it, and I went with it because I wanted some exposure to the upside, and I wanted as little risk as I possibly could. I didn't think it would react that well. It has. I kicked myself in some respects because I probably sold myself a bit short on it. But there's a little option there, and if it does pick up and it does go well, then I've got a pretty risk-free exposure to the story. Naturally, when you see difficulties that we're seeing now in the likes of you know, North Africa or the Middle East, it's these kind of things that people start to look at. They start to look at these little companies that are working in security, cyber security, the drone business, particularly when they start pulling out, you know, the N word when you're talking about NASA. People kind of go, wow, it's probably a quite a minor relationship naturally when you look at the size of this company to that, but it's never a bad thing if you can cut your jib kind of operating with those kind of types of people. Yeah. We've seen
they're in the right sector though, like you said. I mean, and I did speak to Tony, the guy there, the CEO, and he's very ambitious as well. You know, he has ambitions, I mean, as most CEOs do, but he's in a sector where the money is being spent, you know, billions. I think the market's worth $82 billion in the next few years or whatever, and he wants to make it a $100 million, you know, dollar company within a couple of years, 5 years, he said, I think. So he's got the ambition and he's in the right sector, and I'm trying to get in there, but at the moment I'm not going to touch it until it pulls back a bit, because like I said, they're saying now they've got a pipeline of 10 million. So they're in the right sector, and he's got ambitions. And I like this company. I did want to get into them, but in the last couple of weeks, they've gone from 5.5p now to 8.8p. And I'm just hoping it'll come off a bit. And even though they've managed, they're saying that they were their geocurve, what they bought there. They had a pipeline of about 1 million, and now the pipeline of sales has gone up to 10 million. And they punched this out. And I thought, yeah, but it doesn't say how much they've landed contracts here. So they're obviously punching out a bit of positive news. But I do want it to come back, and it's just gone above 200-day moving average. I'm thinking, will it come back? Surely it's got to come back a little bit, because I think it was 12% yesterday it rose. So
Just nothing goes up in a straight line. It's a staircase effect. You know, they'll always take a few up, and there'll be a few down, and naturally, whenever you have a decent run, there's those people that have got short-term vision and they want to kind of cash in. And there's people that perhaps, like me, looked at it and thought, I'm not sure. I'll have a little go at it. And if there's a nice trade to be had on it, great. And if there's a little bit of an option in it, suddenly, you know, these things can just kind of blossom into real beauties. And then you do, you know, you kick yourself, but you know that you know, that inclination, that intuition to at least be drawn to it was right. And that's how I treat it, you know. So there was a reason why I looked at it. There's a reason why I liked it. And it'll be the same for you. Will it come off? They always do. It's where it comes off from, you know. Is it going to be 8.5, 9p and it comes back to 7? You know, is it going to run to 12 and come back to 9? I don't know. But we know one thing. It's never, ever advisable to be in a big rush to buy into something, you know. You're always better to be measured in the way that you kind of conduct yourself. So I'm sure you will be, but that's just my kind of 2p, you know?
Yeah. Well, a previous spike there is about 10 pence, and it's heading towards that. So it'll be interesting to see if it gets above that. I assume it. Because, I mean, they haven't announced anything material contracts yet. So, you know, this is a bit of hot air. Obviously, it will. I believe in the long-term story here, but on a short-term basis, they're not going to deliver, you know, multi-million pound contracts next couple of weeks, so it's plenty of time, I believe. Anything else takes your fancy, Doc?
You would say that, would you?
Yeah, I know.
Like, no, you want to be a buy, you would say that, wouldn't you?
The thing is, I'm trying to micro time it. I mean, I'm sure if I got in now and waited a couple of years, I'd still do very well. But I don't, yeah, you know, it's the risk reward thing, isn't it? I wanted to come back to a support level, so I know there's a limited downside there. But I should have jumped in earlier. That's the thing. Full stop,
you know. Oh, you know what? And never beat yourself up if the trade doesn't go the right way. What's the point in doing that? You know, it's a case of the thing that makes most people successful is people who take a measured approach and have got the discipline. And when they know they're onto something good, they know to hold it long enough. There's too many people out there that when they have a bit of a 20-30% move on a name stock, they sell and they feel like the king of the market. But in reality, they've just cut two positions at minus 60% in order to get in. And the rationale there isn't profitable. It's not a winning way of working. So all of these different people you have on your show, they'll all give you the reasons to how they've made lots of money and how they've been successful. And most of them, you know, call it balls of steel, call it being really good with research, due diligence, or just the fact that they're really very clever people. Whatever it is, the most of them are making good money from either being disciplined on cutting positions early and locking in gains when they get them, or being able to cut positions moderately early and being able to hold the stock longer than the average person. And if you can do that and you can limit your downside and maximize and stretch out all of that upside, you're going to do all right, aren't you? So I think for me, looking at Strat Aero and thinking, shit, you know, it's run away, well, let it run, because there's 1,500 companies on AIM, and at any one given point there's going to be some of them running. So you know, you just need to be on the right side of them. That's for anyone. Don't, you know, I'm not saying that to you on a personal basis.
No, exactly. Do you know what? What you're saying makes complete sense. And I think that all the time. I think, well, do you know what? I'll let it get away. I don't mind. Because if I, like you said, it's discipline. If I keep jumping in to stocks that are hot, you will get spiked out. You get hurt, you know, and you lose money. That's the way. It's the discipline that wins out. So anyway, let's move on. What do you think of ADSS? They announced they're folding their Kenyan businesses, basically winding it down. I was a bit surprised by that. Really, I know it was bad, but I didn't think it was that bad.
The thing that kind of got me about that was the reaction was kind of, you know, it was shocking. I think the market slashed the price. It opened, I think, bid was spot 35, ask was 40-45. But on a few trades, it was back up, and today it's actually where it was a couple of days ago. And the reason this information was known, there was no value or very little value being attributed to what was going on in Kenya. In actual fact, there was a fear that there were going to be, you know, longer term liabilities from keeping this thing going. So what ends up happening is people are really kind of unsure. They're, you know, it creates uncertainty, and that causes most sensible investors in the market, you know, to take a reserved or cautious approach. So once you've got rid of that, it's a bit like removing that kind of the gangrene from the limb, if you like. People now can see what you've cut away, what's left, where the healing process is going to come from, where the business is going now, and what they're doing. And the result of these few days around the ADSS are seeing that news come out and the share price be exactly where it was at the start of the week or the end of the week before. And I think, you know, the one thing we can take from this is all of the bad news so far operationally has been put out there. Now, we know that they've got capacity to raise some cash. We know that, you know, that is a potential banana skin that's out there in the market. Make no secrets about it. I've had it on good account that this business, I've got plenty of people out there that want to give it money. I'm not being funny. The institution that sold earlier in the year, they could be looking at it saying, we can buy that stock back now for a fraction. And if they're not able to, there'll be other people out there who look and say, geez, these had quite an impressive register once upon a time. These have had some really decent, solid assets. And due to circumstances beyond their control, have found themselves at this level. We're at punt stage now, but we're not just at punt retail stage. We're at punt institution stage, because these do have, you know, a number of parties that are still retaining an interest in that company. And if any one of those major shareholders decided, you know what, let's give it a bit more. We've seen things play out. We understand the risks. We've seen, you know, why we are where we are today, and we actually don't blame anybody other than circumstances, i.e. Glencore collapsing, cutting a load of assets, major mining stocks, major oil and gas contracts being lost, having a knock-on effect to smaller operators like this. So I think, you know, if any one of them wanted to just chuck a little bit at it, it wouldn't take more than 50 grand to see this trading at 50, 60, 80% premium to today. That's what we're holding on for. That's what I'm holding on for anyway.
Yeah, and do you know what? The odd thing was, like you said, that when they announced that on Wednesday, the winding up of the Kenyans and business, it dropped. It went by 20% lower, or it went down by 23%. And it touched a low that it never been to since, I look at the chart, since July, and that was a low of 0.425. But it shot back up, ended the day flat. And then yesterday, it was up 4.5%. So you think, that's a significant bounce off a low there, and that was bad news that came out there. And so if it's not going to get below that low, you know, on this kind of news we've had recently, that suggests a strong support level there, doesn't it, really?
Yeah, I think it does. And I've just got this inclination that somebody who's either currently on the register or on the outside looking at it, He's starting to add into it, because it gets to this point and it's just bounced back. And you know, there'll always be those people out there that kind of crow, oh, you know, it's gonna go to, you know, rat shit. And the same people now that New World Oil's come off from kind of spot 10, 11, 12, who at 6 are claiming there'll be a place in at 3. It's utter hogwash. You look at the price that one of the new directors, small investment company, entered at. That's PRS, yeah. Took a big position there at 0.07. And you ask, you know, will they be pro for or against doing any kind of issue at a bit lower than that price? I don't think it'd take a rocket in science just to work out what they're going to do. You know, so at 0.06, I'm a buyer again. Yes, you've got to be patient. And absolutely, it's not for the faint-hearted, given this backstory. But this was trading at, you know, 10, 15 times higher than where it is today. And I know there was a reason for it. I know, you know, there's a lot of events that took place in the market for that to happen. But any company that pegs itself on the map like that, it doesn't take the pot to be stirred up too many times before the kind of honeybees start circling. And I think New World Oil's got that. It can draw the punters in. And I think that, for some companies on AIM, is the biggest hurdle to try and overcome. Assuming Reynolds and Lee will do the business here, you assume it's going to go up significantly. Again, it's just a rationale as to why we look at these things. But the mentality of most people that are communicating within the forums, the bulletin boards, you know, Twitter, most of them statistically are losing money in the market. You know, 90-95% of people are losing. I would say the same number of people are quite dishonest, particularly when they talk about their own personal positions too. You know, a gambler who goes into a bookies will tell you when they're winning. They won't tell you when they're losing. You work there, you know exactly how painful it is for them. Yeah. And it's the same in this game too.
Yeah, exactly. Marvellous, Doc. Thanks for coming on, fella. And if you come on again, I've got people on Twitter said, get Doc on regular. So you'll have to come on regular, all right?
Maybe, you know, it's get Doc on regular, but get him to cover some companies instead of kind of, you know, I think, you know, where we went wrong here today is we went with the David Lenigas, I am David Lenigas, and suddenly I've adopted this I am Doc Holliday and felt that perhaps it was my, you know, right and duty to, you know, kind of convey a message of, you know, how I think everybody should work in the market. Yeah. I just want to make one point before I go. Mm. What works for me probably or possibly won't work for you. Everybody will have something that works for them, and you've just got to build around that. If you try and follow the, you know, the I ams of this world, yeah, you'll be able to respect what they've done in business, but nearly always it just won't work for you. Because if it worked for everybody, if it was that easy, then there'd be far more winners, and there just isn't. So something will work for you, or it'll work for other people, and it won't work for anybody else. But you've just got to be able to identify that and work around it. But apologies if I've not been as, you know, in depth on specifics today. But it is what it is, and we'll be back again soon, hopefully.
Marvellous. Speak then, Doc. Cheers, fella.
Cheers, mate. Thanks.
That's it for the podcast. Apart from to say, this podcast is dedicated to BenL66, who gave me a 5-star rating and this review on iTunes. This is the title, My Go-To Podcast, 5 stars by BenL66. And Ben says, I've been listening to the podcast for nearly a year, and this one has made it to the top of my list. Contains great content with easy-to-digest information, but please remember this is a review. Please do your own research. Yes, I like that, Ben. I like what you're doing there. I will dedicate the podcast to you if you give me a review on iTunes and a 5-star rating, like I did with Ben there. See? And don't forget, please, everything here on this podcast is opinion as regards stocks. Everything is really. So please, do your own research, okay? Don't buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation of the podcast, as it's only just the opinion of the person talking about it. And we may hold positions in the stocks we talk about. Thanks very much for listening. I'm off now up to Big Gibbs Momentous Events Bash in London to chat to companies and people I've not met but talked to on the podcast. So, speak tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Muchus. Appreciate it.
The ADBFN podcast with Justin Waite.